Inside Vegas is presented by MyBookie.ag. MyBookie.ag is the official online sportsbook of the Inside Vegas podcast, as well as the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Use promo code SGP50 to receive a 50% deposit bonus today. Inside Vegas is also brought to you by Oddshark. Oddshark has the latest betting trends available nowhere else, as well as betting picks from their supercomputer. Check out all of their quality content and betting trends at oddshark.com. March Madness is almost here, and you're going to need one thing, and that's a bookie. And there's no better in the industry than MyBookie.ag. MyBookie.ag is the official online sports book of the Sports Gambling Podcast and the Inside Vegas Podcast. And for this episode, we are going to bring on part two with Tom Drill, who's the risk manager at CGT Properties, the M. And we basically wanted to essentially make this podcast everything we couldn't touch on in the first one and kind of tie a bow on it, especially because we couldn't make it a 2-hour podcast to start with. And there's just a ton of great things. There was so much info that I wanted to get out there because this was the one time and one opportunity that we kind of had to look behind the curtain and see what makes a risk management team and an odds makers team tick. So some things that we broke into was basically the limit size for sharp and public guys and kind of how those are determined, the different types of clients, different types of customers. What makes somebody sharp? What makes them quote unquote square? You know, if somebody's moving the line versus if they're just chasing steam, because it's a huge difference in how someone would move a line and why somebody would move a line. Basically, we get into some examples of different types of clients and some things that happened in his time at CGT's The M, as well as the live betting app, the application kind of. If limits, if it's true or false that limits will get cut, if you can get kind of banned from them. And as well, we finally break into what is on everyone's mind at the upcoming NCAA tournament with March Madness. Basically, what we looked at was what that type of liability and that type of money into the market does. And if it changes anything, if one really sharp and really professional guy can move the market the same now that there's potentially millions on the other side of liability. So again, we just tie a bow on part one, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Back by popular demand, we have Tom Drill back again in the hot seat. We wanted to kind of take we wanted to break it up into two parts, basically because one, we didn't want a 2-hour podcast for the first one. And secondly, there was just too much info to kind of pack into that, to touch on it within, you know, to give everything its proper due. So we took a little bit of your questions and broke this down into basically another 5 parts of kind of everything that goes into Las Vegas bookmaking, Las Vegas risk management, client analysis, all type of things. And at the end, we're going to tie this all into what is on everyone's mind, the upcoming NCAA tournament, and kind of what the influx of money and influx into basically overnight a market goes from, you know, a handle of a regular NBA, you know, Monday, Tuesday night into, you know, millions and millions of dollars dumped into this market for the NCAA tournament upcoming on that Wednesday. So we'll kind of take a look into all those things and kind of what makes this market, you know, kind of flip on its head all of a sudden. So Tom, welcome back. Thank you again for coming on.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me. I'm glad we had this opportunity to do a second part because I wanted to go into more detail about the customers themselves and our relationship with the customers.
Perfect. So, I mean, without further ado, let's just jump into kind of the parts that we left off, the first one for this part. During the feedback process and everything that we heard from listeners and all that, one of the big things that we kind of touched on was limits and kind of sharp versus public lines, sharp versus public bettors. So we'll just kind of revisit that a little bit into basically limits was a big one. So we'll just kind of revisit that into what was basically sharp limits versus public limits, if they are different. For example, you know, we talked about NFL had, you know, 50,000 kind of flat across the board. But again, you'll give clients, customers, different lines based on kind of who they were and who they are. So just kind of touch on basically limits for sharp versus public bettors and kind of how you even determine if someone is sharp or if they are a public bettor.
Yeah, we definitely just, we brushed over that a little bit in the in the first part, but we can go into more detail now. I said to you that our limits for NFL was 50, for example, 10 for totals. But that really is for your public bettors. The sharp guys, they'll get closer to 10 with the NFL, mm-hmm. and they'll get closer to 2, 3, maybe up to 5 on the totals. It really is a case of what the customer is doing, whether they're moving the market or whether they're reacting to the market, whether they're a professional punter or whether they're just a public guy off the streets. It really it determines what the customer is, determines how we make that decision.
Is that the same for all markets kind of across the board? Like, for example, most places, again, I don't want to keep using the UFC comparison, but it's just kind of the most popular of the niche markets as UL. Again, most of those are, you know, 500 to 1,000. Is that, you know, for any, if somebody wants that you don't know, say, a $10,000 bet on a random prelim fight, is that something that can be talked about and can be given? Or is those, you know, are niche markets the same as kind of the big ones, the basketball, the football, the hockeys of the world?
The UFC, no. To answer your question, no, we won't give $10,000 on a prelim fight just because a customer wants it. We may give them the full $10,000, but we'll stagger it. Mm-hmm. So we'll give them 2 at the number that we have, and then another, say, 3 at the next number, and then 5 at a number after that. We'll always we'll try to put the customer on, but it will be on our terms rather than their terms.
And is there kind of a...
And that is simply because we don't want a $10,000 to $15,000 liability on a prelim UFC fight. So if we stagger the bet that way, it gives us a chance to move the numbers and
get buyback.
And get buyback on the other side. Yeah.
So is that, I mean, when you talk about these niche markets versus the big ones, is that just simply because there's no one else in your shop that's going to take the other side? And that's the reason for why you wouldn't take that big of a bet on, say, you know, a tennis or anything like that. It's just, there's no one that would bet the other side.
The tennis. Yeah. There's no buyback on tennis. We just have to, if a customer wants a bet, we'll give them the bet within reason to what our limit is. And sometimes we just have to stand it.
Right. And do people kind of, I don't want to say come at you, that's the wrong term, but who kind of, who cares more about their limit size? Is it a tourist in for the weekend? Is it a Las Vegas recreational bettor that lives here and is, you know, a repeat customer, but they're, you know, betting their $100, $200, you know, per game? Or is it the sharp guys or kind of who gives, you know, who is that? I don't want to say war. Again, that's the wrong term, but who is that back and forth with kind of more? Is it public or professional?
Yeah, it's definitely a kind of a war, but we actually have a decent relationship with our sharp customers. They know what the limit is. My boss has spoken with them personally, and they have a limit that's comfortable for them and comfortable for us as well. I'll give you an example with the NFL. We have a professional punter. He gets 10 on the NFL, and he's fine with that. He's comfortable with that, mm-hmm. and it's big enough for him to do whatever he wants with it. But it's small enough for us that we can get off it. It's actually the square customers that we have more hassle with, and the newer customers. For example, a guy just opens an account and starts betting 5, 6, 7, 10,000 on NBA and whatever, and he doesn't know what our range is. He doesn't know what our limits are. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know what we're willing to take on any given market, on any given sport. So he's constantly probing the app and sending bets through on the app to sort of test our limits and see where he can get on and where he can't get on. So that becomes a bit of a battle. We don't want to send him away, but every bet that we take has to be on our terms, and we have to manage our risk accordingly. So sometimes these newer customers, they're just so desperate to get on that they'll just keep sending large amounts. And sometimes we can't always take those kind of bets.
Exactly. And that makes a ton of sense in that, first of all, is when you say a $10,000 limit, can they like bet online? A couple of these other offshore books have what's called rebet functionality. Basically, if they hit their limit at 10,000, they can bet it again as soon as the line moves. Mm-hmm. So if you give somebody a limit bet at say 10,000 and for an NFL game and it's -7, but it goes down to -6.5, can they rebet their limit or are they kind of flagged? And as soon as they have their limit on a game, that's kind of it.
No, they can bet again. They can bet once we make a line change or a price change. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's 10 per bet. Perfect. And I'll use that as another example with the customer I mentioned in part one. our college football specialist. His limits are 5 on side and 2 on totals. And that is, as I said, with the other guy, he's perfectly comfortable with that. He keeps level stakes all the time. 5 on the side, 2 on the totals. And he never changes. He never wavers from that limit. And it's great because he bets on a Thursday evening for the games on Saturday. So he's betting well in advance. He's getting on what he wants to get on. And he's telling us where because he's very, very good at what he does, he's telling us where he thinks the line is going to
move to.
Yeah, so we're aggressive with his moves. And it works. It is mutually beneficial for both parties.
With that, because he has, you know, such market influence, and, you know, once he makes his initial bets, I imagine you kind of move the line, you know, at least, you know, a half point, whatever. Can he rebet, or would that particular customer always somewhat rebet? Are they always at 5? And that's just kind of what they're...
The customer can rebet for sure. Once we make a line move, they can definitely rebet. There's no problem with that.
Perfect. So with those types of things and kind of identifying these type of clients, I mean, there's so many different types out there. We just talked about, you know, kind of the Las Vegas local who is your blue collar guy, works his job, but just wants some action on the weekends the way that, you know, people do and have action offshore and with these offshore books. There's, you know, the public, the general public, like we just talked about, there's the professional side. But kind of how do you make a determination on kind of what type of customer they are? Because that will kind of affect a couple of different things. It'll affect their limits if they're, you know, quote unquote pro, if they're quote unquote sharp, you know, if they have an app in their track, kind of their win-loss record. But just with so many different types of people, just how do you kind of put everyone into a box and kind of label some people?
Well, it's definitely a different case in Las Vegas. In Las Vegas, from the book that I've worked for sure, and I'm pretty sure it's the same elsewhere, there's only 2 categories. You're either sharp or you're public or square. We have a limit sheet, and we have a sharp limit sheet and a square limit sheet. And the sharp guys get the sharp limits, the square guys get the public limits. But a lot of our job, or the majority of our job, is based on customer analysis because we're constantly having new customers signing up. So we're constantly looking at what their betting patterns are, what sports they like to bet on, what their average stake size is, and we're also looking at what number they're taking in comparison to what the closing number is. So when we factor all of those things in, we get an idea, we get a picture of what this customer is like, and we can see whether they're on the sharp side or the public side. As we talked about in part one, a sharp customer is selective, he has level stakes, and he likes to bet early,
mm-hmm.
And he doesn't bet parlays. Public customer is going to bet parlays, he's going to bet 3 minutes before the jump, and his staking is going to be all over the place because he might chase his losses, you know, that sort of thing. So you definitely get an idea. Looking at these patterns, you can definitely build a picture of each customer.
And with that, one of the questions that we got was kind of, is it easy? Is it better to bet late? Is it better to bet early? Does that depend? I mean, the first thing that I kind of learned when I took handicapping to the next level was you always bet favorites early because the public has a tendency to back favorites, and you bet underdogs late is basically up until kickoff, right before tip. Basically, because again, with the public's kind of infatuation with favorites, the line value seems like it would always be on the underdog late. So is there a quote unquote better time to bet either side of those?
That's certainly true. I think the time to bet would be any time that you think the number is going to move in your favor.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with NFL specifically, it's better to bet earlier during the week. The limits will be lower for sure. But if you have the jump on any team news, any injuries, that sort of thing, you can beat us to the number. You can beat us to the information. And so it's definitely better to bet earlier during the week. If you want to bet 15 minutes before a game kicks off, the market will be so solid, and we will have our numbers manipulated in such a way that we try and that we can offset some of our position that we've built up during the week. So anyone who's betting 15 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes before a game's about to kick, that they can pretty much have whatever they want. It's earlier in the week that you're going to get that the market is still forming. So if you like something, get on it earlier.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest differences I've noticed between people who take this seriously and people who just kind of do it as a recreational hobby is when they bet. And everybody that is a public bettor bets late. They bet at the, I don't know if it's a thought process that you're going to part with your money longer. Even if it is, you know, again, if you go through and you only have a set amount for the day, then you need to win to continue, essentially. So, you know, that's what, where the kind of chase games and then all those terms kind of come into play. But when we talk about how people kind of, you know, when we put people in a box and things like that, how do you, you know, talking about kind of analyzing customers, analyzing clients, how do you kind of sit there and label different people? Is it just win losses? Is it bet size? Or kind of how do you go about that?
I'll give you an example. In the UK, we labeled customer with different colors. It sounds funny, but it's absolutely true. I mean, a black customer, a customer with a black color was a sharp. Green was VIP. Red was a cheater. Yellow was somebody that we're looking to watch. And then we, not only did we have the color system, but we also had different bet sizes. So you could say customer A can get on for 50,000. Customer B can have 10. Customer C can have 500. You know, and customer D can have $25 and get lost, basically. Mm-hmm. So it became, and that was the same in Australia as well. We had our boss would put notes on each customer's accounts saying he can have X amount on a particular sport. And it just became so messy. It's became so complicated and so messy that it was too difficult to manage. I like the way that Las Vegas does things here in that, as I said before, you just have two limits, your sharp limit and your public limit. I'll give you a quick example. In the UK, when I was working over there as a telephone operator, we would regularly shout across the floor saying, "Mr. So-and-so wants 20,000 on a soccer game." And our head of soccer, he would shout back, "What's his name? How long has he been betting with us? What sports does he play? What's his average stake size? And what did he have for dinner last night?" Basically, We want to know everything, as much information as possible about each customer in determining how much we then give them.
Right.
And it's the same here with my boss in Las Vegas. If we ever flag a customer up and bring it to his attention, he'll ask the same kind of questions. And the main question that he'll ask is, what is he doing? What is he actually doing? And what I mean by that is, Is he moving the market? Is he following the market?
Steam chasing.
Is he steam chasing? Exactly. Or is he just betting randomly, haphazardly, and he has no idea what the market is and no idea on what our number is in relation to the market? So those are the kind of questions that we'll answer when we're flagging customers.
So what are some different types of all these, you know, is there, do you have any specific examples basically of how you kind of, what the different types of customers in Las Vegas are and kind of how you put, again, I don't know, you can't put them in box, but kind of how you kind of label these people. Like you said, in the UK, you had that kind of, the color system.
Yep.
Is there, you know, what are some different types of customers that you deal with day in, day out within Las Vegas?
We have a few specific examples. We have one particular customer, loves to bet NBA, loves to bet college basketball, will only bet sides, doesn't touch totals. But his average stake is 20,000 every time. We actually give him 20,000 on the NBA and 10,000 on college basketball. And he's comfortable with that. And we're obliged to take his bets.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with that. But the problem comes with the fact that he bets literally a minute before the game is about to tip. So sometimes you may have no position on the game. This particular customer comes on.
Just ruins your whole liability.
Just ruins our whole liability.
Because you can't set the market because it's so late.
You can't get off it. And the game jumps. And you just have to sit back and and sit on it, basically. You can't, there's no way to get off it. You have to stand the bet. So, as I said, there's nothing wrong with that, but it does become frustrating at times because, as you said, his bet sometimes is all the position we have on a game.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't necessarily want that position, but you can't do anything about it.
Right, and that's different from a lot of kind of professionals because they're way more likely to bet early and kind of set the market rather than follow it. And that's not to say that anyone who just happens to get a bet in late at the particular number that maybe that's just the number that they like. So it's kind of different in that you don't know who's actually following the market and who's just, you know, that's just the number that they wanted, even if it is a worse number or, you know, kind of whatever that is. So that's but I can see how that would kind of flip everything on its head. Is there anything you can do to kind of prepare for that? Not prepare for that, but again, this goes back to kind of envisioning where sharp money will come in and kind of flip that liability on. But is there any way, I mean, how do you kind of preemptively deal with that type of a customer that always comes in late?
We can't prepare for it. There's nothing we can do about it. I would say it's easier. We like to customers to bet as early as possible, just because we're able to get off it if necessary. Parlay action is a different story, but customers will sometimes just keep sending parlay after parlay after parlay, racking up 50, 60, 80, $100,000 positions. And my boss will then cut him off at probably $100,000. And the customer might say, well, why aren't you taking any more bets? The answer to that is yes, you can bet this. You can bet straight bets. Mm-hmm. You're done with your parlay action. But if you want to have a straight bet, that's absolutely fine because we can always get off a straight bet.
Right.
It's harder to get off a parlay bet than it is.
You can't recreate that liability of a 3-4. Nobody's going to bet the exact opposite 3-4. I mean, they can, but it's rare that the two would line up like that.
Yeah, definitely. But straight bets are far easier to manage than parlay action. And I said in part one that parlay money is essentially dead money. That is true, but you still have to take that huge liability into account. I have other examples of customers, if you wish.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so give you another example. We have, again, bets NBA and college basketball. This guy only bets totals, and he not only that, but he only bets under as well. Just always under whatever the number is. It's always under.
Yeah, that's kind of my philosophy with baseball. 95% of my bets are first five unders, and that's because I take as much variance out of it as I can. So that eliminates the bullpen. So I kind of get that. But basketball, you said that was basketball, right?
This is basketball, yes.
That's a little bit different than baseball in that there's just always crazy variance. But that's kind of my thought process on why I take just basically only that position in baseball. But that's interesting that it's basketball. Has he ever given you a reason for it?
No, we have no idea why. And I honestly couldn't give you a reason. He doesn't do very well, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
One thing I have noticed about this guy is that when things start to go south, especially on a Saturday, he'll try to smash out on the UFC.
Yeah.
And again, with the UFC, he only bets favorites with the UFC. So whatever he's lost during the day on the basketball, he'll try and chase back his losses on the UFC. If a couple of favorites go down in the UFC, he's had a stinker of a day. And we see it yesterday. We saw it with Hernandez and
yep.
Was it Dariush?
Yeah, Beneil Dariush.
Yeah.
Hernandez closed, I think, plus 385, I think. Darius minus 500. So yeah, UFC is different, man. Big favorites will happen.
5-1 favorites get beat every single day.
For sure, yeah. It's the fight game. Anything can happen. It's two people fighting in an octagon. I've always said that.
We have another guy, again, another basketball customer, just throws money at us. It doesn't matter if it's full game, first half, second half, championship games, or the lower conferences, totals, spreads, anything that he wishes to throw a dart at that particular time. And we're talking 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, up to 8,000 at a time. And like I said before, sometimes we can't always take those bets mm-hmm. because he's betting first halves, first quarters, whatever he wishes at that time. So sometimes it becomes difficult. With the first quarters, you can't get off that bet again. Right. So just going back to my same point, if he wants to bet 5,000 on a first quarter total, it's difficult for us to get off that bet because there's just no volume on first quarter markets to swallow up and dilute that liability. So sometimes we just have to knock him back and give him a dime or two dimes max. He's not a sharp guy. Like I said, he just throws darts, but
see, that's the difference to me in somebody. When people say sharp, that's the difference between somebody that has money and is still a public bettor for all intents and purposes.
This guy has money and just doesn't know what to do with it. Whereas the sharp guys might be only be betting a dime, 500, but they're far more informed about where the market is.
And that's what goes back to part one, which was basically what moves lines more, people or money. And again, just because you have a lot of money doesn't mean you're sharp. For all intents and purposes, that's the same thing as a public guy. It just has a higher bankroll than $100, $200 parlays. It's the same thing. It's just, you know, you're adding a couple of zeros to your liability. But is there anything else, any other examples you have of kind of things that have stuck out in your mind?
Yeah, I've got a great example for the NFL. One of our largest customers, I think we're going back. I don't think it was this season. I think it was last season, a Monday night game. And I forget the specific teams, but the line was three flat. And for one reason or another, my boss was at 3 minus 15.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our largest customers came on and had 23,000 at minus 15, 23 to win 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. No problem at all. My boss puts him on. Moves the price 5 cents to 3 minus 20, and that was enough to get the scalpers come on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So plus three at even money opened up a small window for the scalpers to come on.
Mm-hmm.
So we took 20,000 back at the plus 100, and locked in a small profit. Once we'd done that, my boss moved the price back 5 cents. And so we're back to 3 minus 15. And that whole process only took 20 seconds, but that. So much liability came instantly, but that happened, no exaggeration, that happened about 10 times.
Mm.
This particular customer just set 23,000 every time, bang, moved the price, 20,000 back at even money straight away. Bang. Again and again and again and again and again. And it was just, it was eye-opening to see, to be honest.
The market kind of in full effect like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And this customer, he just kept sending bet after bet. And my boss would just move it, take 20,000 and move it back. And each time it was free money for us, basically.
Right, because you just take it one time.
Yeah, yeah. That is what we do on a day-to-day basis, is just move a number, take some back, and keep ourselves in line with the market. You know, we're happy to put customers on as long as it's within our limits. That's basically what I'm saying in a nutshell.
Yep. Was all that action over the counter, or was that all apps?
That was all apps. That was all on the app. Yeah.
Cool. So kind of shifting gears into the app, and we talked on this during part one and kind of what the app's done for Las Vegas, what it's done for the industry. We want to touch on this a little bit more in that, specifically a couple of things and what you can kind of do with that app. And the first thing was why bets get rejected on the app was kind of the biggest question that came across. So if you just touch on kind of why bets, whatever, get rejected on the mobile app.
This is a very frustrating thing for us and for customers. We constantly have people coming up to the window and asking, why does my bet time out all the time? Why is my bet getting knocked back? And I really wanted to answer these two questions because you're hearing it from the horse's mouth. This is a direct line into the risk room.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to directly speak to your listeners who are essentially our customers.
Yep.
And I really wanted to answer this question. So, firstly, why does my bet time out? We have 27 seconds in order to see the bet, see how much it is, check the price against the market, and decide whether we want to accept that bet or not. It sounds like a lot of time, but it really isn't when you have a constant stream of bets coming through and the screen is lighting up. Our system, for some reason, it gives us 27 seconds in order to see the bet and make a decision on what we're going to do with that bet. So sometimes a bet will time out just because we don't have enough time to approve it because we may have 10 or 15 bets coming through at the same time. So my message to your listeners and to our customers is that if any time a bet times out, please send it again. There's a very good chance that it will get approved the second time around. Mm-hmm. We're working to lengthen that time frame as well. And we've raised that issue with our IT department many times. We're hoping to get that improved.
So for anyone that doesn't really fully grasp what he was talking about with that 27 seconds, for live betting, this happens to me all the time in kind of my locals if I have to use it offshore. Basically, whenever you put in that live bet, there's always that kind of that circle that goes around, or it says, you know, pending for, you know, like you said, up to 27 seconds. And sometimes it says there is an error processing your wager, or your wager has timed out. What he's talking about is basically him being the other person on the other side of that who has to click yes for your bet to say, you know, live wager approved or wager approved. So when you see it on an offshore on a sports book, that's exactly what he's talking about.
It's and I would add, it's not always an automated process. There is actually a person behind the screen having to click approve. It's quite often a manual process as mm-hmm. well. There is actually somebody who has to physically hit accept on each bet. So it becomes quite time consuming. And as I said,
imagine, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it the same thing for live bets and like just regular straight bets before?
No, live bets go through automatically mm-hmm. and regular, anything under like a threshold of $100 just goes through mm-hmm. automatically as well. We're just talking about the larger wagers here. The second question is, why does my bet get rejected? Now, this is a different answer. When the screen is lighting up and things and a price is moving and we may have missed the jump on it, we're going to see 3, 4, 5 customers come in at the same time on the same bet. Mm-hmm. And our rule with that is as fast as fingers first. Mm-hmm. The first person to get in, to get that bet in, they get the bet, everybody else gets knocked back mm-hmm. because we don't want customers picking off good numbers, basically. My boss, he wants us to stay within market unless we need the bet. Unless we need the bet to offset a position, you more often than not, you're going to get rejected. So my message to anybody out there who is just looking at a screen and betting steam, basically, mm-hmm. You're going to get rejected more often than not.
Yeah. It's not even the real number too, because the market has to catch up to the steam. Like there's a process from when it opens, where the market goes up or down, and then the close. And so if you're just kind of jumping on at, you know, in between where the market opens and where it closes, just because you think that that's where an initial move came and it's not the final one, or it's just a move being set up by a professional or somebody that's just looking for a numbers grab.
Yeah. There's a difference between, those two customers I mentioned earlier, our college football guy and our NFL professional. These are the guys that are moving the markets mm-hmm. and we greatly respect their business. On the flip side of that is when you're just chasing the screen, we call it chasing the screen. Basically, if you're just sitting in front of a computer, looking at the screen and waiting for the market to move. Mm-hmm. And if that's the only time that you're going to bet, we have no tolerance for that. If you're just chasing steam, more often than not, you're going to get rejected for the simple reason that sometimes the market may move 3 points. I mean, with college basketball, these totals sometimes move 7, 8 points.
Right.
If you're betting over 135 points and suddenly the market is 140, 141, 142, it's a bad value bet for us to accept. And as I said before, every bet that we accept is always going to be on our terms rather than the customer's terms. So we won't move the market. We will reject the bet, but we won't move the market completely all the way to 140, 141. We may go to like 139, 138 and a half. We want to give the customer a bet, but we don't want to give away value for the sake of it.
Is that looked at any specific way, or do you have customers that will just chase Steam and chase the market?
Oh, 100%. We have so many customers that just do that, and it becomes quite tiresome to see the same names come through. And we know as soon as we see these names, we know that we've missed something, mm-hmm. that the market is moving, the screen is lighting up. And it becomes, as I said, it becomes quite boring, to be honest. But I can understand where these customers are coming from.
It's their way of being able to essentially tail a professional without, you know, buying picks or doing all these things from quote unquote professionals.
Yeah.
If you see a market move, I mean, again, knowing what we know now, that it is only market. I mean, there's only money that's moving that line, nothing else. So with that, you know, if a line goes from minus, or if, you know, a total goes from 130 to 140, there was a significant play that came in on that. I mean, we've talked about this straight from your mouth, that there's no trap line. There's not moving it in the other way to kind of entice a bet or do anything like that. It's strictly money into the market, which is creating a liability, which is the reason for the move. So knowing that, if you see a move towards one side or the other, the chances are that, you know, again, the thing is, though, is that money going into the market doesn't care who it's from. So if it's like the type of customer that you said that, you know, will fire $5,000, $10,000 bullets, then, you know, and he only, so he's hitting, you know, say 40%, just because, you know, it's on that, you'll move the market the same based on your liability.
Yeah, for sure.
So
yeah.
You don't know if that money is sharp, if it's just a rich guy that has absolutely no idea what he's doing. So that's crazy interesting and kind of a really important dynamic.
You get like a reverse move coming back the other way.
Right.
When the pros out there, they realize that the total's gone too high and it needs to come back down.
Right, and creates a middle opportunity as well, which professionals absolutely live for. So with that, talking with these types of customers and clients, one of the stigmas or something that, you know, I've potentially had happen with me is your limit size being cut on these mobile apps, because everything is tracked and it's no longer quote unquote in cash. It's, you know, so is there, you know, if, let's just kind of put it out there, is if you get hot, will your limits be cut? If you get hot enough, will you kind of be turned away from betting on the mobile app?
Yes, they will.
said so nonchalantly.
we're in business to make money. I make no, I'm not ashamed to say that.
Yep.
If a guy is consistently beating us, we certainly reconsider the kind of limits that we're giving him. And eventually, if we realize we can't beat him, we'll turn him away. We're not here to make friends.
Yep.
We're here to make money. It's as simple as that. On the other side of that, if a customer is consistently losing and they try to smash their way out of trouble, we're not going to let them do that either. And that may sound funny. That may sound counter to what we're trying to do here, but we don't allow customers to smash out.
Mm-hmm. When you say smash out, what does that mean?
Okay, so if a customer's average stake is $500, and they've had a bad day and they may be down $3,000-$4,000, we're not going to let them send a $5,000 bet to try and win back everything they've lost.
Okay,
they may do that and they may attempt it, but we don't allow them to do that. There's an old saying, and I think it was an old Las Vegas bookmaker that said this, you get out the way the same way you got yourself in.
Mm-hmm.
You get out of the hole that you dug yourself the same way that you got yourself in. So if you're down by betting $500 limits, you get yourself up by betting $500 limits, or whatever the case may be.
So with that, I mean, it does sound a little bit counterintuitive and contradictory, being, you know, saying that if someone's too good, you won't take their bet anymore. But yet if somebody is having a bad day, you won't let them get out. I mean, how does, and again, I realize that this isn't, you know, your philosophy specifically. This is just, you know, this is the business and what it is.
Yeah, but we're talking bookmaking philosophy in general.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak for any other company in Las Vegas.
It is that, I mean, because all he has to do is go somewhere else and they'll never know who the bet was from. So, yeah. I mean, it's not as if he can't get the bet down, but why would you not take that bet? In that, is it just, it's a literal moral thing, or what is the reasoning behind saying, no, we don't want to take that $5,000 bet after that customer's been down all day?
I think that once we know that a customer is down and we've got their cash basically, they could easily smash their way out of trouble, get in front, walk away, and we never hear from them again. Mm-hmm. We don't want to turn away any customers, but we also don't want to have a situation where customers win, leave, we never see them again. We want that repeat business. And if we can establish a relationship with a customer where they have an average stake size, that's fine. There's also from a moral perspective, it's like a landlord knocking back a person who's drunk at the bar. You know,
yeah.
You know, we say, look,
a bartender cutting someone off.
A bartender saying, cutting somebody
yeah,
off.
You've, and had, say, you've had one you've, too many.
You've
today,
had one
yeah.
too many. No, what? Why? If you want to try and smash your way out of trouble with this $5,000 bet, what happens if that loses?
Yeah.
You know, and then there's the moral side of it. Oh, you allowed me to get myself into trouble too much. I have a problem gambling. I have an addiction, blah, blah, blah. And then you get into that side of things and it becomes messy.
So is there any other reasons why somebody would get kind of kicked off the app or not be able to place a bet on the app?
Yeah, there's a few certain specific incident instances where we'll definitely kick customers out. We may have left a game open, especially on the live betting side of things. We yep. may have accidentally left the game open. The prices have become stale, and the game is over, basically, but yep. it's still available to bet on the app. We've had that happen quite a few times, and it's purely human error, nothing more. And customers will just come on and just bet it over and over and over, and they'll take us out for thousands of dollars.
Do they still get paid out?
Of course they get paid out. We must honor every bet, but they'll never get a bet with us again. Mm-hmm. It's just, again, it's morally, it's just not in the spirit of things. So we kick those guys out.
So when you say they'll never get a bet with you again, that's only on the mobile app though, because in theory, if it's somebody that you don't know or you haven't seen, they would just have their account kind of suspended, but they could still place over the counter bets with CGT, right?
Essentially they could, but we make our supervisors aware of those particular customers. They have not only do they have all of their details, but they actually have a picture with their ID. Mm-hmm. So if they do see them coming up to the counter, they can turn them away.
Right. And that's kind of one reason why when you fill out a mobile app kind of application, for lack of a better word, you know, they get your license, social security number for all the tax purposes and stuff like that. But that's kind of the reason beneath the reason of why you get a picture ID and why you have it.
Well, customers, I've noticed, especially in Las Vegas, they prefer the anonymity of it, of everything. They prefer.
Sure do.
Yeah, they certainly do. But I'm not so sure that is essentially the right way to go about things. We've always said that if a customer is happy to sign up for an account, we can give them higher limits on the app than we can over the counter.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of the trade-off.
That's the trade-off. Going back to the point I made before about knowing who your customer is, if somebody walks up to the counter and wants to bet $20,000 on any given market, straight away we're on the phone to the supervisor. Who is he? Where is he from? Have you seen him before? Is he a regular customer? How much does he want in total? All of those questions will get asked. Whereas if the customer is betting on the app, we already have that information straight away. So again, it goes back to the point about building a relationship with our customers and trying to give them the best service possible.
Exactly. And speaking again, this isn't, you know, me saying that I'm something or I'm all this. I've had limits cut on my app. And again, it can happen off a simple hot streak. It really can. It does not take a ton because everything is tracked and everything can be seen right there. And that's why people, including myself, kind of prefer the cash method. Yes, 100% being able to use the mobile apps, especially during heightened times like a March Madness. You don't have to sit in line for 10 minutes like a Super Bowl. Yep. It's 100% convenient. I can pull out my phone if I'm at dinner, if a live number pops, or whatever it is. But it is a realistic thing of that is the downfall of kind of that convenience. And, you know, it is nice to see that you'll give people higher limits in that for that trade-off. Mm-hmm. Again, the only thing I would say from a gambler's perspective is you can offer someone higher limits, but on the other end, you're going to cut their limits if they get hot. So yeah. It kind of goes both ways. But again, it's a business, and that's, you know, that's your side of the counter, you know, kind of versus mine in that.
Just another quick point about the mistakes that are made, human error. We've had instances where we've opened up an overnight NBA game and we've accidentally forgotten to put the line in. It does happen. It happens more often than you may think, to be honest. Yep. It is just human error. And we have a particular customer who just sits and waits for us to make those mistakes.
Yeah.
And as soon as he notices something,
how does he still
like
have
that,
an account?
My very question as well. I do not know. Yeah. If it was up to me, he would have been shut down a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still there. My bosses just refuse to shut him down because he does send the odd genuine bet now and then.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime there's a mistake like that where you can get over 0 points at minus 110
yeah.
or a favorite at pick when they should be minus 8,
mm-hmm.
he'll send the bet and every time he'll get rejected, but it doesn't stop him.
Yeah. So he's never been paid out from a bet like that?
No.
Yep.
No. We're able to intercept his bets
yep.
and see that we've made a mistake straight away.
Are you able to intercept, do you just intercept his or if somebody, you know, kind of found that when you, because we said earlier that you would always kind of honor those bets with those, like a live bet if it was kept up.
A live bet goes through automatically.
Right, so that's why.
So we have to honor it.
Okay.
But if it's, if it comes through intercepted on our system, we have the right and the ability to reject it if we wish.
Mm-hmm.
There's one other instance I'd really like to point out.
Yep.
It was about a month or two months ago, we accidentally opened up a two-way market at plus 175, plus 200. Again, human error, simple mistake.
Yep.
Should have been minus 200.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a known, prominent...
sports gambling figure, we'll call
it. Yeah, let's call him that. Sports gambling figure, known in the Las Vegas community.
Content provider, picks provider type of thing.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Came up to the counter and tried to bet the plus 200 for $500.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately it came up on my screen and I rejected the bet. And because I knew exactly what had happened.
Right.
And I made the fix. If it was up to me, this person, regardless of the fact that he's well known in Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
regardless of the fact that he's on daily radio shows, you know, and all of that.
Was given that leeway, yep.
I would have shut him down. Mm-hmm. If it's not up to me, I'm not in charge. But if it was up to me, he would have been kicked out straight away and he would never have got a bet with us again. But sadly, we allow these customers to do this sort of thing and they just keep on trying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad to see, to be honest. It really is.
I have kind of a dueling thought process on this. One is you've talked about kind of the advantages that gamblers have versus odds makers and risk managers in that, you know, we can focus in on one market while you have the whole market. You know, we can kind of pick and choose and do those type of things. On the other end, I mean, I don't know. I don't know exactly where I stand on this because on one end, I feel that if you hung a bad number, be it human error or not, you know, if you're a vigilant person or, you know, and you can kind of pick these things off, I kind of almost feel all the power to you. I really do. And then it should be honored because outside of, you know, a technical error or a software glitch, which is, you know, something that's obvious like that, which that was not the case. That was just, you know, a number being essentially basically probably typed in wrong or whatever it was, mm-hmm. whatever the case was.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, because I feel as if, you know, if you go out somewhere and you see, you know, a shirt for sale and it's a $250 shirt, but it's marked down to $3 for,
you know,
is that your fault that was marked out wrong? If you can get out the door with it and you paid your price, you know, you paid your minus 110 on it or whatever the vig is, you know, in any given situation.
Yeah, it's a dog eat dog world for
right.
sure. It certainly is, but it goes back to the question of what is morally correct,
right? No, exactly.
Yeah, and not in the spirit of we have to run a business like anybody, right. like anybody else. And we like to again, going back to the same point, we want to build up a relationship with our customers. It's not an us versus them mentality. Mm-hmm. If we can give customers the set limits and they can walk away happy, then that's all the better for us.
Absolutely.
Because customers build our, we need the customers. We need customers to build our business. Mm-hmm. If you have no customers, you have no company, basically.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So I want to get into basically the hot topic issue, which is March Madness upcoming in the NCAA tournament in about 2 weeks, 9 days. It's already here already. I can't believe it. But before we do that, let's just talk about MyBookie. MyBookie.ag is the official online sportsbook of the Sports Gambling Podcast Network and the Inside Vegas Podcast. Enter promo code SGP50 for a 50% deposit bonus today. All right, so March Madness. So with basically influx of all these tourists, all these guide trips, everyone coming into town, what happens? The same thing that happens in the Super Bowl. You have what amounts to, you know, the market essentially in liability basically gets flipped on their head. So what I kind of wanted to ask somebody from behind the counter from the risk management side of this is, what changes in the thought process of moving a line now that, say, you have an extra, you know, couple million dollars in liability potentially? Is it still the same? You know, if your most respected college basketball guy comes in on one position during the tournament, but now instead of only having $3,000 in liability on the other side to offset it, you have, say, $100,000. Does anything change, or is anything even remotely different, or is it still you're just married to the numbers, you look at the data and you switch it?
We're pretty much married to the numbers, to be honest. We're always, as I said in part one, we're always looking at what the right side is. And you are definitely right. There's going to be far more volume coming into the book during March Madness. But a lot of that is going to be parlay action, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And that sort of gets... for want of a better term, that sort of gets swept under the carpet, the parlay action. That just goes, it goes in, and unless it's a huge parlay, we're not really looking at it. For straight bets, yeah, if we take 5, 10, 20, whatever it may be, because there's so much more volume, our move is going to be less, unless we're away from what the market is on the screen. As much as we respect our odds compilers, and as much as we try to balance our books, it does come down a lot to where the market is. And my boss is pretty strict on that. He doesn't like to be away from what the number is, mm-hmm. from what the market is, unless we need the bet.
Yep.
So just going back to the point about volume, yeah, there's an incredible influx of money coming in March, and again for the Super Bowl. So a $3,000 bet on a basketball match back in November might be enough to move our number, but it's a drop in the ocean mm-hmm. in March.
Exactly.
So those bets just go in. Again, it just takes a few moments for us to look at the bet, look at our number, look at the market, see which customer it is, and we know, yeah, that's in, and it just goes in straight away.
Will people or money move the market during March Madness? This, you know, we touched in 100% before this, it was always people and who the bet was coming from. Now,
yeah,
with there being so much more public money, is it still people, or does the public have more of a say with their money this time?
Just generally speaking, it's specific people, mm-hmm. The professionals out there that we know and we respect their business. But it's not always the case. If we take a $10,000 bet on a side from a square guy, we're going to move it. Mm-hmm. But we're not just going to move; we're only going to move it less. Mm-hmm. So we're constantly looking at where we are in relation to the market. If a guy's taking a market number, a square number, we'll put them on.
Yep.
And sometimes we get into a situation where myself or my coworkers, we're not sure whether we want to take this specific bet. And again, it goes back to the same questions. Shout out over to my boss. Hey, we've got Mr. So-and-so wants 15,000, 10,000, whatever on a particular side. What's he doing? Is he doing anything? What's the number? Is it a market number? Yeah, put him on. Mm-hmm. My boss, more often than not, he'll put people on.
Yep.
He'll try to do as much as he can to put people on.
Is there, futures are a huge part of March Madness, right? Everyone gets kind of, you know, whether it be they pick their team or if you're a professional, you know, maybe it's a number set up, you know, for example, Arizona with the coaching thing and with Trier and a couple guys out was, a number I grabbed was 22 to 1. It's back down to 11 to 1 now that those guys have been reinstated. Is there, you know, we touched on this kind of with football in day-to-day lines, if futures kind of play a part in that. I know that odds makers are the ones that are setting these lines, but are you, is there a huge futures liability within NCAA, or is it not really, you know, maybe from the 1 to 2 seeds, the Michigan States of the world, your Dukes, all that stuff. I mean, again, those are, especially in a year that's kind of wide open. I mean, those are priced, you know, 4, 5, 6 to 1. But are futures more, let's say prevalent, but are they more, do they make their presence known a lot in the NCAA tournament or not really when you're kind of making risk management?
We see far more money on the daily games than we do on the futures. So we're focused on the daily games for sure. I mean, if you go back to the Super Bowl, we knew that we could run a sort of $500,000 liability on the Eagles on the game because we had close to a 7-figure number profit on the Eagles if they were to win the Super Bowl.
From a future standpoint.
From a future standpoint. So we were able to use that futures position to take some bets on the Eagles on the game itself. And like I said, once you have these high-profile games and once we get into the Final Four and the championship game of March Madness, a $10,000 bet is just going to be a drop in the ocean.
Yep.
And sometimes, and again, I'm just generally speaking now, but sometimes customers don't realize that, especially like tourists. Mm. Maybe they'll come into town and they'll have
their hot shit with their $1,000 bet.
Yeah, with their $5,000-$10,000 bet, and we're sometimes just like, yeah, sure, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And they might sit there, place their bet, go back to their seat, and look at stare at the board, waiting
expecting us
to move the number, and it just doesn't happen. They're like, okay,
yeah,
I'll go and bet it again, and we'll take the bet again, and we still won't move it.
Yeah, you know, it's almost a bucket list item for somebody to say that they moved the number. It really is.
It's
a high like no other. I'll tell you.
No customer, whether you're a professional or you're a first time bettor, nobody has access to
the single ability to move that line from one bet.
Well, yeah, they don't have access to see what we see
right
behind the counter, or to know what liability we're standing on any particular game. So it's whether we move a number or not is purely based on our liability.
Perfect. Yeah. And that's the only thing I want to touch on was the ability to that you guys would have to be middled in that. If, you know, when you said that we're not going to go away from market, so we're not going to make a huge jump unless it's kind of warranted or you're away from market. So that's where a middle opportunity would open up for your specific book, really. But is there anything else you want to touch on? Not really want to, but anything that's different from a liability standpoint with March Madness, anything that's different other than just the volume is different. You add a couple of zeros to your liabilities each way and everything else is really the same. People have, I feel like a lot of questions I got were kind of regarding March Madness and regarding the Super Bowl and kind of when things get, you know, super busy for a book. But is there anything that's really different from a day to day other than it's just busier from a volume standpoint?
I don't see any difference myself. Each day, we have set guidelines on how much we can take and where we move the numbers to. So whether it's a spring training baseball game or March Madness. Yeah, for me, it sounds kind of funny, but for me, there is no difference. We're dealing with money and we're moving numbers.
Yep.
The only difference for us is the amount of volume that comes in, and that certainly has an effect. But I would say if you're coming into Las Vegas and wish to place bets with the sports book, stay away from parlays.
Money line parlays will kill you. Yeah. Especially in the tournament with so many upsets.
Yeah. If you like something, just bet it straight. Shop around for the best number and do your research and keep to your limits, keep to your level stakes. And also I just wanted to make the other point that, which is pretty much the same point that we made at closing out in part one was that sort of us versus them mentality. If you ever have a grievance with us, just come into the sports book and speak to us. Don't give any, don't hassle the ticket writers. They're part-timers and they don't get paid much.
Yeah.
Don't even hassle the supervisors because they probably wouldn't be able to answer your specific questions regarding limits.
Mm-hmm.
Ask to speak to one of the risk managers, ask to speak to my boss, the head of the risk management room, and he'll happily come out. He's a very approachable guy. He'll happily come out and discuss your particular grievance, and he'll discuss your account with you, what you can get set for. So we're definitely, I want to take away that idea that you can't speak to us, you'll never see us, we're in the back office and, you know, we're controlling everything. But we want the customers to think that we are approachable. You can come and talk to us and discuss certain aspects of your account and what you can get on. I definitely want to try and, again, going back to the same point, I want to try and build up a relationship with the customers, because without the customers, we're nothing.
Couldn't have said it better. That's a beautiful ending, buddy. Well, again, thank you for coming on to finish up this part two. This has been basically one of the most listened to podcasts in the Sports Gambling Podcast database, honestly. And you're a huge part of that and giving people essentially a look behind the curtain and all things Las Vegas. Again, obviously, you have nothing to do with offshore, so we can't speak to that. But basically, this is probably one of the most insightful interviews I've ever listened to. And I'm not just saying that because I was the one that did it behind the counter. So I can't thank you enough, man. And good luck in all your journeys and expectations, all right?
Thank you. Thank you.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.